In this episode of the Michel Serre Project, I'm joined once again by Massimiliano Simmons to discuss Michel Serre's text, The Troubadour of Knowledge. I'd like to say a big thank you to all paid patrons and subscribers for making all of this work possible, and if you would like to support the podcast or become part of the community, please find links in the description below. Enjoy. Massimiliano Simmons, thanks very much for joining us on Hermetics Podcast once again.
It's great to be here again. I had a lot of fun last time, and I hope we will have some fun today as well.
Hopefully. It's always fun discussing Serre. It's always. So we're going to discuss The Troubadour of Knowledge, which, I mean, every single time I've done this, and it's been a while since I've done a Serre episode, but every single time I've come to, like, try describe one of Serre's books in a nutshell, it's really difficult. Thumbelina was probably the easiest. He makes it very explicit what that book's about. The Troubadour of Knowledge is really about learning. It's described as a book on learning and difference. And it's about, in a certain sense, topology, mixing epistemology, and the process of learning and the process of acquiring knowledge from a tutor, from an educator, the idea of what education is. As with all of Serre's texts, it's not something where I can say, you know, this is his question and here is his, like, his goal is to answer this. It is a meandering, in the positive sense, sort of journey through the themes that he's taking on. And even to list, you know, I mean, let me just get to there. So the chapters simply are three chapters: upbringing, instruction, and education. So that's sort of the positively vague journey that you're going through with this book. And this is actually my favorite Serre text. It's the one I've read the most times. So I've said that now, so I have to be really on really on guard. But we mentioned before I started recording that this, the title translation, so the original title of this in French, is actually one of the most different ones in terms of translation. So you said you sort of wanted to say a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it links nicely with the question you raised yourself: what is this book about? And indeed, I would summarize it as it's a book about education, a pedagogical book about upbringing and all these terms. And so the original French title is Le Tiers Instruit, meaning the instructed third. So it's quite a change from instructed third to troubadour of knowledge, although there is of course a connection, but it has a different connotation. But so the title already has this notion of instruction in there, this kind of pedagogical notion. And so the way how I would, if I would take up that ambitious attempt to summarize the book, I would indeed say it's about Serre's take on education, but then you should wonder, why is he taking up that question? And therefore, the title might be interesting. So if you read the book, this notion of the third is everywhere, right? It's all over the place. It's always looking for the third position, for the third figure in certain relationships. For instance, when he opens, or one of these opening chapters, it's about him swimming over a river to the other side. And then he's fascinated by that point in the middle of the river where your orientation shifts. You're not going away from the side at the back of you, but you're going towards the other side. And that's, for instance, one of these figures of the third, and it's all over there. And I would frame it rather as kind of a positive book, whereas in his previous work, it was typically the kind of negative story of the third, in the sense that the excluded third was his fascination. A simple example would be the other book we discussed, The Parasite. The Parasite is that third who is excluded. But the fascinating element is, of course, that this excluded third, like the parasite, or like, for instance, in his book on the natural contract, the earth is excluded, nature is excluded, we only look at social relations, is that despite the fact that it is excluded, the relationship itself between the other two figures, is constituted by that third. So, for instance, a very simple example would be, and that's an example you find in the Hermes series by Serre already, is communication, right? And we are having a kind of conversation here, but only because we exclude all the noise from the outside world. The doors are locked. everyone else is outside, no TV is on, etc. All the noise we are trying to get rid of in our conversation, etc. And so in that sense, Serge's take on communication is precisely this idea of, it's not so much there is a silence and then suddenly someone has to speak up and start talking, break the silence, but rather the other way around, in the sense that there is constant noise, everyone is always talking, everything is always already making noise, and communication, meaningful communication, arises when you exclude everything except these two figures that has a meaningful relationship, for instance, you and me at that moment. All the other noises have to be silenced, all the other parasites have to be eradicated. So in that sense, that's a negative story. The violence that is implied by all communication, by all science, I think about doing an experiment in the lab is excluding all the other elements. And then you could read this book as a positive attempt of him saying, what is a positive role, the constitutive role of this excluded third? How do we educate ourselves, instruct ourselves, get to a better position, grow through this third figure? That's one way how you could read and situate that book in its broader oeuvre in that sense.
So, I mean, actually, this draws us straight in to the text, with the beginning of the text. I'll try pull this together, with this idea of communication, constant communication, and constant push and pull between, you know, as you say, we have to not include everything else for me and you to be able to have this communication, but there is this huge other patchwork of communication going on, which equally, you know, we're ignoring, and at the same time we're probably drawing from it in some sense that it's affecting us. And the Troubadour of Knowledge begins with this story of the Harlequin's coat, or the Harlequin's patchwork coat, which in short is this coat made of, you know, multiple bits. Well, it's a patchwork quilt as a coat, really, built of, you know, rags and tatters and bits of nice coat, bits of bad coat, etc., etc. Sam writes this as beautifully as ever, of course, and eventually this coat is sort of taken off, I believe, to reveal a skin which is patchwork. And this is sort of, I think, Sayre's way, sort of cheeky, tongue-in-cheek way, because obviously, in the revealing that the skin itself is a patchwork, I think it removes a lot of this ambiguity of whether or not there is this cultural, sociological, biological, philosophical mixture of all things. You know, you can't just have this binary form of communication which isn't affected by everything else. And I think he's addressing that problem that people come to with his work with communication, when, you know, when you first see this coat, you think, okay, it's going to reveal to something which is perhaps we might have finally have an origin or a core, but it's revealed and actually it goes, you know, a layer further, and there's even more communication mixed together in this level. So I mean, that's the question I'd put for you, is, I mean, how do you read this story of Sayre's, and, you know, in what sense in what way is he trying to tell us something about education with this story?
Yeah, so I read that, the opening of that book, many times, and it took me, and it still, I mean, still puzzles me, but I can make more sense out of it. I think one important element already is that it's not that surprising, that story, that he takes it up, because it's it refers to a 17th century commedia dell'arte, so the kind of show by the by Nolan de Fatouville, if I remember correctly. It's called Harlequin, Empereur de la Lune, so Harlequin, Emperor of the Moon. That's also what he refers to. And it's, I think he came to that story through Leibniz. So Leibniz himself uses that story as well in his work. And Serre, obviously, is a big fan of Leibniz. Leibniz is, for instance, central to the doctoral dissertation. And he opens the doctoral dissertation also, I believe, with a quote from this Commedia dell'arte. And so there are many layers, quite ironically, of the story itself. So the story itself is not that you can just dismiss the clothes of the story and then you find the essence. So there are many layers itself to that story. One is indeed, as you said, this kind of idea, if you can link it to the previous thing I said, that there is this kind of fiction that, for instance, in the communication that we are having now, that there is a purity there, that there is a kind of unchanging essence, or that nothing is mixed and nothing is multi-layered. Whereas in reality, so that's one way to read it, that whatever situation we have, how pure, how clean, how controlled you think it is, there are always mixes and tiny things still being there. And once you just look a bit beyond what you see first, you'll find other layers. And there is not a kind of essence behind it, indeed. It's always, it's layers all the way down in a certain sense. Until you end, indeed, with the skin in the story. But even the skin is just, it then focuses, for instance, on this notion of flesh. And flesh is a strange notion that in a certain sense, biologically, physically, doesn't necessarily make sense. But it is, in essence, a mixture, again, of all these living elements of blood and skin and whatever. But then even the story ends with where Harlequin becomes Pierrot, another kind of figure in this Commedia dell'arte, the white person, then completely white. But that doesn't mean the absence of colors, but in the case of Serre, always means all the colors combined, in a sense. And white is just all the colors at the same time, rather than the absence of color or something like that. Now, another element of that story that I find fascinating, and that might also bring us to this educational question, is so this notion of the emperor of the sun, and then a repeated sentence is this idea that the emperor comes back from distant lands, from the moon, whatever, and he says there is nothing new under the sun, everything is the same there as it is here. And then Serre links it, well, one way to link it is precisely with this blindness for how behind everything there are multi-layers, but it's also about the fact that this emperor, because he's so powerful, is not instructed by these distant lands. Wherever he walked, there was a red carpet in front of him. That's the kind of metaphor that Serre at one moment uses. He never really visits distant lands. He never is influenced by different experiences, etc. So you have that theme as well of the one in power, the one who has kind of, who imposes his or her ideals, concepts, structure on the world, will never learn anything from the world. So the pedagogical take is then the opposite, that we have to, that's somewhere at the end of the book also, we have to hold back, we have to restrict ourselves. And then this multiplicity of voices in the world, if you want to put it that way, of new experiences can inform us, can form quite deliberately these different patches of our clothes, as Serre would put it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So you don't, it's fairly clear that these patches aren't meant in any specific sense. You know, they are meant culturally, sociologically, mythically. You know, this is a, as you say, as soon as you remove that carpet that the emperor has stood on, you are in communication with all these different patches, and you're allowing them to form the cloak which you have in a certain way.
Yeah, so the idea, in a certain sense, it's very metaphorical, but at the same time, you could interpret it again in the line of his earlier fascination with information theory and the like, where he precisely would say, focus on that term of information. Again, if you really literally look at it, it's something that informs, puts his form in your body in that sense, or in another body. That's what information could be, in the sense that, so if you visit different land or visit a different situation, you are informed by that situation in the literal sense that the things around you that are constantly communicating, constantly making noise, impress something on you. And so you have that new patch from that new aspect of life, that new aspect of the world, and you take it with you home. In that sense, you are this collection of patches with all information from all the things you have experienced in your life.
So in what sense, I mean, this is a fairly vague question, but I guess I'll use the quote that I've put down here. Serre pushes the idea of not taking the East Road, one should take the river. In what sense can someone find a direction from within this patchwork for themselves, for Serre? In terms of, I guess in terms of the book, that would be in terms of becoming informed within a direction, becoming educated in a certain sense. Because at the moment, I guess it would seem that, well, this patchwork seems quite chaotic. In what sense are we to I don't want to seem too, as you say, pedagogical or like drawing a border, but in what sense are we to sort of sculpt our way through that that patchwork of being informed?
That's a good question. I'm not sure to what extent Say answers that question or wants to answer that question. I think a quote that stuck with me at the end of the book somewhere, where he says what he wants to offer is not a method but an exodus. So his pedagogical task is not so much to provide you a roadmap to a predetermined end goal or something, but an exodus in a sense of you have to go out of the classical situations, the limited experience you already have. So it's kind of plea to go out in the world in a certain, that's one way how to read it. But to link it then, or to attempt to answer that question, one way to frame it would be the following, that what he is after is precisely an kind of cultivation of the fact that we should have new experiences, that we should visit new places, new people, etc. But at the same time, kind of recognition that it's impossible to always be out of the center, right? There is, it's not that we need to get rid of any centers. It's rather you have to leave the center and then come back to it. So kind of oscillating movement between the center and the periphery, or finding new centers. So the model is rather that of you have to use existing centers not as places to rest and to stay, but as kind of slingshots to throw you to new places. And then for a while you'll circulate the new sun, and then you are again slingshotted to somewhere else. That's perhaps more the kind of model that he's thinking of. So there is this kind of risk or tendency of the book to read it as a kind of end of all centers, the end of all purified, stabilized, controlled situations, to get a purely chaotic situation. I don't think that's necessarily the most interesting way to read the text. It's rather kind of precisely creating the tension between the center and the periphery. And in that tension, you will find the right tools to instruct yourself, to prepare yourself, to form yourself in novel ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's just a little bit later on, he states you need a cross to locate a center. So when you're discussing these, you know, finding a center, whatever a center is, and slingshotting off, there is a cross. There's always, in terms of there being a point, there always has to be some overlap, you know, back to that patchwork once again, some overlap of things where you can have this place or point of being informed, where you correlate the knowledge you have at that moment in that singular point. But there isn't, I guess what's important to emphasize is that to think of a center or a cross or a point for Say would never to be to think of some originary sort of birthing point. You know, there's no sort of fundamental underlying position there.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. So it's not indeed that there is a kind of original center. It's precisely more the opposite. Centers themselves are themselves locally created, temporary. They disappear, etc. So the kind of metaphors he will typically use are this. A recurrent theme, for instance, I don't know whether it's in this book, but it's in many other books, is where he talks about Venus or Aphrodite. She was born out of the sea. So you have a kind of purely chaotic sea, and then at a certain local moment, you have a kind of contraction almost in a person, and then you might have a center, and you have this person, and that might evaporate again later on. So I would indeed always interpret his statements on center and periphery as a very temporary element, but also in a kind of relative way, in a sense that what is center and what is periphery is never absolutely given. It's always in relation to the whole system, for instance. So the sun is, of course, the center of our solar system, but it's not the center of the universe, etc. And once you just go to another level, you have different centers, etc. But there are always this kind of focal points, this localized, situated centers through which you could slingshot yourself, if you want to take up that metaphor again.
And you think, in relation to sort of education and learning and knowledge and being informed, this is a way for Sarah to sort of make it clear for us to not, you know, not have some sort of ownership or almost like nationalistic domination of the knowledge that we have, that it is this fluxing thing which we're in constant, you know, constant sort of construction with in terms of our own patchwork, so to speak, that, you know, you can't think of education in terms of this having this stationary point, that you always have to be moving in a certain way.
Yeah, so education is indeed precisely relational. You have to leave the school and go back to the school in a certain sense, rather than stay in school forever. So a kind of recurrent theme in the book is again this kind of, it's not a method, it's an exodus, is you only learn something when you leave, when you go beyond what people have told you. So you don't just repeat whatever the teacher told you. You do something, you create something with it yourself. And so you go beyond the teacher in that sense. So you have this kind of recurrent theme of him criticizing, some kind of teachers, grammaticians, if that's a word, in the sense of people that teach you how to speak, but who never themselves create novel speech. They only repeat the rules. And of course, for Serre, that's something frustrating. So what he precisely also attempts to do in his own books, that's why you don't have summaries of positions by other authors. He tries to create something new. And so he uses authors themselves as centers through which he can then sling himself again to new positions. And one way to read that again, or that's how I would link it, it's not without his opponents. So in France, for instance, very popular model still at the 80s, 90s, I would say, is that of someone like Gaston Bachelard, the other French philosopher of science. Serre wrote his master thesis under Bachelard, etc., and wrote a lot about him in his early writings. And so for Bachelard, rather the model was, society is a permanent school, or science is a permanent school. You always stay in school. You always are a kind of student, etc. Those kind of themes. And so it's quite interesting in that sense to read this text, where Serre precisely always says that the good student leaves school, in the sense that, of course, you have to go to school, but only for a limited of time. And then, again, you just find other centers. You go out there. So in that sense, it's definitely not a view on education where you have a fixed set of these are the things students should learn, these are our values, etc. And it's always about the end goal of learning is really to leave these things behind, etc. To forget, even, as he sometimes says in the text.
So, I mean, In what sense does Serre understand a school simply as that sort of institutional place? You know, we'll get to this in the end, but obviously you're writing a book which brings in Foucault and the French philosophers around Serre's time, and, you know, clearly Foucault is dealing with schools in that sort of that fairly strict sense in terms of prisons and power knowledge and them having this influence on you, which then to a certain sense constrains you know, how you then are informed by the world. Does he read what a school is in a certain sense, and what, you know, the way in which we are informed in a certain sense? Does he believe that there is a way we can approach that, which is sort of novel?
So there might be another connection indeed. So Michel Serre was a student and colleague and friend of Foucault. And what you find in Serre, especially also in other books like The Five Senses, is a kind of theme that he takes from Michel Foucault, a kind of distinction between the natural sciences and the social sciences. And then he associates social sciences and also the pedagogical sciences with surveillance, with power, with critique, and all these elements that control people, hold them down, doesn't create anything new, police statements, and these kind of things. And indeed, in that sense, I would not say that Serre is thinking about a school as a classical institution as we know it. school in a certain sense is for him that what happens outside of that building almost. I mean, it could be useful to a certain extent, the information you get there, but that's not learning. Learning starts when you take up that information, you go outside, you put yourself in a new position, a new job, a new place, a new country, and then you consume that information in a certain sense. In a sense, you burn it up. You don't repeat it, but you use it to create something novel in that new situation. I think that's the way how Serre would think about these educational aspects. So he's quite wary. Again, definitely not pleading for going to school all your life, because he would indeed also link that with a kind of Foucauldian theme of that means that you're permanently under control of the teacher and whatever he or she says is the good thing, the right thing to do, etc.
So one thing I sort of want to bring in, because it plays a key role in this book, but in a lot, obviously in a lot of Serre's texts, is the role of topology, you know, which we've spoken about in a certain sense in terms of the patchwork, but I believe it does play a bigger role in this text. I mean, so yeah, what role does topology play, you know, in the Troubadour of Knowledge?
That's of course a very big question. So topology, I mean, it plays a role at in most of Serre's texts. Again, in a certain sense, his PhD thesis was supposed to be on topology and all these things, but he got sidetracked by Leibniz. He discovered Leibniz, thought, oh, that would be a good introduction for my PhD thesis. And in the end, he wrote a PhD thesis, or an introduction, you could say, of 600 pages. And he never got to the real PhD thesis on these new developments in mathematics. So topology, the study of knots, so this figure of the knot, the connection, the etc., is central to many of Serre's central metaphors, etc. And again, so the way how I would say it in how it's present in this book is in this fascination, for instance, that you could. And so topology is about how a certain object can be put under stress, can be transformed without breaking, right? So that's what topology is interested in. You know, think about clay or something. Can you put it in a completely different form, but without cutting, without breaking anything? So it might be, in that sense, a kind of metaphor for how flexible and how he sees this education, and precisely this kind of stretching without breaking in that sense, and seeing what kind of new forms your body, your mind, etc., can take without, of course, you seek the kind of edge in a certain sense. You expose yourself to stress, but without completely breaking down. And again, with in a certain sense, through returning to the center, you never completely leave your form, but you only transform in new shapes of the same form in that sense. So that might be a way to link it specifically with this book.
Do you think in that sense that, you know, that idea of transformation is one in relation to what we were just speaking about in terms of the different types of schooling, in terms that what, in one sense, you know, if you stay in a certain form, you are being policed, you are being informed in a certain way, and therefore you are attending to the world in a certain way. But if you transform, if you, you know, undergo this sort of stress of information and transform in a certain sense, you become the master, you know, you step off that rug that the emperor was stood on and allow the world, you know, allow yourself to be immersed within the world, as opposed to having this constrained form which attends to knowledge in a certain way.
So perhaps one way to bring it back to the text in another way. So there is a set of remarks that basically pop up in all books in one way or another of Serre, and also in this book, where he talks about the soul. So he often also tries to say something, what does it mean to be a person, to be a subject, to have a soul even. And he, in this book, he describes it as well, to have a soul consist of a tension between a fixed point, a center, you could say, and a kind of exposure point. Again, you have to seek up some kind of exposure, stress, new situation. But it's not the abandonment of that fixed point. It's the tension between your starting point and the new things you seek. And again, you could read that almost topologically in that sense. And in terms of this transformative question again. And so he poses it. So this notion of exposure is also central in that aspect. You have to, education is again not keeping in one shape or creating one shape to an educational institution, all the students look alike or something, but to expose yourself to the world, not fully and not forever, of course. You return then, and you are transformed through that kind of interaction with the world, through that information with the world, if you want to use that metaphor again.
Okay. I guess then, in that sense of being trans, you know, being formed in that way, is there a danger for say that you could equally attend to knowledge or education in a sense that you are going to be transformed, you know, in another sort of almost oppressive way?
So the question is then, to what again is say not blind for possible questions about domination, oppression, propaganda, perhaps even in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Probably he would interpret it in the light that think again of the emperor from the moon, always on his red carpet, doesn't see anything new under the sun. So it's clearly that Serre would oppose that kind of relationship. If there is this kind of oppressive relationship, that means precisely that at least one party, one side of the conversation is incapable to transform themselves, to learn anything new, because it just imposes its own model on everything, whatever it faces. Wherever it comes, it sees the same. That's one of these metaphors that Serre also uses in the beginning. Now, Serre will not offer a kind of way of political resistance against that kind of oppression. It's never a kind of collective philosophy in Serre, and especially in this book, it's really, for me, the value of that book is not kind of advice of how to socially reorganize society. It's the pedagogical stake is really for the individual almost. How do you as a person has to take up your educational, your pedagogical task for yourself? And so he would, of course, resist that kind of oppression, but it would then be a kind of personal resistance. And then perhaps the advice is a bit dull in the sense that you just have to avoid that kind of teacher. You just have to avoid that kind of situation. You have to find a way out of there. And again, that might, I mean, especially again, thinking about Foucault, that might require political resistance and whatever. But that's not what's at stake in this book. This book seems really to be about almost in the line of Epicurus and this kind of typical Greek philosophy in the sense of how to improve your life style. You could read that book more of Michel Serre as a kind of attempt to improve your own subjectivity, to improve your own soul, etc., if you want to put it that way.
Okay. And I guess one thing I would say that, you know, this notion of this sort of, I've got it in my questions here, that the notion of this sort of middle ground, and I guess I don't want to go too much further towards that idea of improvement, because that's a bit, I don't know, westernized, and it's a bit different, I think, to education. But in this process, I guess, to use that metaphor again of that emperor, in that process of stepping off the carpet and finally setting forth out into the world and being informed in that new sense, there is this elusive middle ground, it seems, for Serre, where there is this sort of this risk. And do you think this is once again in relation to one's subjectivity, as you were just saying, as before, you know, I guess you could almost stretch that first metaphor out in terms of you've become comfortable with the coat that you've got, and you don't, you know, you don't want to alter it in some way, and there is, you are you know, you're averse to these risks of being sort of slingshotting yourself into this new trajectory of information.
Okay, can you rephrase that question?
Okay. I would do a complete rephrase. I guess in terms of, you know, the patchwork coat that we all sort of have, there is, I guess we would find a comfort in the coat that we've come to know and come to love for years and years and years. And in that process of it altering, in the sense of coming into contact with new experiences, new information, new senses, we are presented with a risk. We're presented with something which is strange to us. And, you know, I guess the question is, why for Sarah is it that we should sort of deal with these risks and deal with these new experiences? And why is it that we perhaps would want, not that Sarah's saying this, but why is it perhaps that we would want to, you know, stay in that same coat? Or am I completely off the mark?
No, but it's in a certain sense such a fundamental question, because I have the impression that it really points at one of these central, what you could say, assumptions or starting points from Michel Serre, namely that the ideal is indeed to not stay at the same place, but to go to expose yourself. And that might have to do, in the case of Serre, so you could say that's his central ethos that he prescribes in a certain sense to individuals. A good subject is one who exposes himself to the world. You could, of course, wonder why would one have to do this? Is this not risky but with people who do not like to go outside, etc.? Then either Serre might say, well, okay, we don't all have to become third instructed. It's an ideal to which you could aspire. But you could also perhaps link it or make it more ontological or metaphysical, if you want to say that, again, linked to this Harlequin figure, that maybe ontologically we are always already this kind of exposure, this link with others. There is no self that is pure and has to be defended from the outside world. The self itself is linked and is only as rich as there are links with the outside world. So, of course, you could at a certain moment stop that interchanging, stop that kind of creation of new relations to the world and abandoning all the relations perhaps. But you cannot fundamentally at least go without it. So there is in that case, it would probably be a kind of temporary phase where you at a certain moment say, I have enough experiences and now I'm going to stay home for a while, although given the current situation. People might find the opposite more interesting. Or that there's a kind of luxury of already having all these experiences. You already have enough experience. And only then you could say, I'm going to stick here and stay inside, etc. Although again, then you could wonder, is Serre not almost too idealistically or even elite-wise thinking of people who have the luxury to go everywhere and to expose themselves, whereas you could imagine people who do not want to expose themselves because they are already in danger or are already in a precarious situation, etc., given a work or economy, etc. But then perhaps the answer is simply they are already exposed to all these new things. They are already learning from so many things. Of course, they don't have to go as well to other places. And the risk in these cases is the opposite. It's not the lack of exposure, but overexposure, too much exposure. And then in their case, the advice might probably be you have to somewhat go back to the center, find a center, find a stable point for a while, because you are risking to break, to rupture yourself, etc.
Okay. Yeah, no. That does answer what I was going towards there. I mean, I guess one question people might have in terms of this, I mean, you outlined at the start that this isn't this idea of this overlapping, this patchwork, this as you say, many people now with experiences, it might be an overexposure, but this isn't chaotic. You know, there is I don't want to say a logic, but there is a sort of a map, an overlapping of certain things where you can hold on to one thing, hold on to some experience and understand it and be informed by it. So it isn't just a pure sort of chaos of experiences and data. But I think within that, people may ask, what happens when everything is this overlapping, this sort of assemblage, to use a risky philosophical term, of experiences. What happens to the particular? What happens to context? And obviously, I've been reading a fair bit of Kangiem lately to sort of prepare for an interview. And obviously, this is someone who's influenced Serre, and Kangiem is someone who's completely, unless I've mixed it up with someone else, which I really hope I haven't done in the moment, but someone who's completely focused on that idea of a particular, of context. And, you know, what happens to those particular contexts within this framework of an overlapping experiential informed system of education?
Well, let me start approaching that question by making that link with Kangiem. So Kangiem was a supervisor of Michel Serre, and there are personal stories there to tell about how they once liked each other and then it broke down, but I'm not going to that. That's another story. But you could link it, and it's with the kind of classical point of Kangiem about what what does being healthy means, what is being normal means, etc. And in the case of Kangiem, that then, to put it very simply, meant to be healthy is to be more than normal, to be capable to overcome the kind of norms that govern your behavior and to adapt yourself to new situations. It comes very close in that sense to what Michel Serre is after here, in the sense that to be healthy is being capable to go to a completely new path, go to a different country, exhaust yourself, run a marathon, all these things. You're capable to transgress the norms that normally, well, between which you normally behave. But of course, that has a limit as well, in the sense that your body cannot handle any kind of transgression of norms. You have to have some kind of, there's some kind of limit to how far you can go before your body breaks down or you die. And at the same time, there's always, again, there, the return movement. Of course, you can for a while transgress your norms and run a marathon, but you cannot do it every day. Again, you have to return to a kind of accepted set of norms. And in that sense, this kind of capacity to transgress, this capacity to go beyond what is normal, is found in Kangiem and in Michel Serre. And I think they would agree, Ebert, you feel free to begin on your question in that regard. So I think they would agree on how indeed it's, again, it's not just the act of transgression that is interesting here, but also the necessity of having a kind of framework, of course, from which you start. And you have to have this, as we talked about it, you have to have the centers from which you start and that define, in a certain sense, relatively the context to that center. But they are not absolutely given, but they are there as kind of temporary stable factors you need only to, again, go to new places, new situations, new experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess, I mean, that answers the question very well. So, I guess moving forward, there's an interesting passage for me, where Serre states, "Rags become my very flesh." So this is sort of going back to that coat right at the beginning, which is then covering someone who is, their skin itself, their flesh itself is this mottled sort of patchwork of different things. And perhaps this, my reading of it is a bit too straightforward, but are we to understand this, that this coat, which is understood as these external, social, informed, educational experiences, these literally do become us in a way. These merge with us in some way.
Yeah, so it picks up a bit what we said before about the soul and the self and what does it mean to have an ego, etc. And I would generally say Serre is inclined to define that indeed relationally. You are what you are related to. It's not you are kind of a nexus, a kind of point, and a point is defined as a number of straight lines crossing each other. So you are the kind of center of a set of relations, and that changes if those relations changes, if you create new connections with new people, new places, new objects, then you yourself will be redefined. So in that sense, it's always also a cultivation of the context, the milieu, the environment, the objects among which you move and you behave, etc.
You've answered a lot of my questions very sort of articulately. So there is something you emailed me before about light in this book that you wanted to bring in, that I actually missed out on my questions, but I did some reading this morning. So in what, I guess I'll just ask the vague question, in what sense, in what role does light play in this text?
So light, it's a theme that Serre likes to play with at a number of books. And in this one, it just struck me. So one thing, for instance, that he wants to avoid or break with, if you want to put it that way, is a kind of the classical role that the metaphor of light often plays in, especially epistemology, thinking about science and knowledge, namely that enlightenment, that coming to light, that bringing to light, etc., is the kind of goal, the positive thing, the thing to strive to. Whereas in this text, he precisely wants to, I mean, in a very number of interesting ways, problematize that notion. And one more abstract way would be, of course, that light as a metaphor gives you the impression that the right way, the right methodology, the right path is always the straight, fastest, direct path to the goal. And that's something that Serre would clearly disagree with. I would precisely say the most interesting, most rewarding methodologies and paths, etc., are precisely the mazes, the kind of indirect ways to get there, etc. A very, very more intuitive way in which, for instance, he problematizes these metaphors. That's a typical way how Serre does it, is linking it with all kinds of other metaphors. With you have the sun as a center, who is not really the center of the solar system or of the, especially now, the universe. You have the notion of the Sun King, Louis XIV, the French king called Sun King. So again, the link with sun and power is there that Serre wants to avoid. And he also at a certain moment says, philosophers present it as if we like, as if we should and prefer to do research in the light, but often it's more interesting to, or even more rewarding to do research in the shadows, in the dark, etc. For instance, you could only see the stars when it's dark. The sun actually makes you see less because of its presence rather than see everything, that kind of metaphor. Or precisely, some phenomena becomes only interesting when you see different shades, when it's not just desert sun or the cold, dark caves where sun never comes. Precisely the kind of intermediary places where sometimes there is a bit of light, sometimes there is darkness, etc. Those are the moments. Again, this is this third figure between sun and darkness that becomes the kind of interesting tension and exposure for scientists to learn new things, but also for the individuals to thrive. And those are the places that are perhaps most valued as places to live, where new life forms can come into being, etc. So he does play with that theme of light in a quite interesting way in the text.
Yeah, I mean, I have one final question here, which I wrote these questions quite a while ago, so my memory has actually sort of gone on this one, but it's about the process of rebirth, which I believe happens, the idea of rebirth comes in later on in the text.
So the rebirth, it has a lot of connotations, of course. It's a very Christian connotation might be there. Again, also the Venus Aphrodite metaphor there of the birth out of chaos in a certain sense. But so the way how I take it, or the way how I could link it with the kind of general theme, kind of general thread that we have been following, is again that true education, true instruction, through pedagogical institutions are not there to just affirm you in one specific mode, but again to throw you out. It's Exodus as a model. And then that process of going out in the world. That's kind of classical theme in literature as well. The young man, typically man, never woman, goes out in the world, makes a journey, all kinds of new experiences, and then comes back reborn as a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might be the kind of metaphor that Serres is taking up in that notion of rebirth, kind of transformation through exposure, typically, because the rebirth is, it's not the original act or something, it's not the birth. It is after you have done something, after you have been exposed to something, after something transformative happens to you, etc. So it's a kind of reconceptualization of yourself, your body, your mind through that exposure once again.
Mm-hmm. But there isn't, you know, I think I've sort of probably made this point quite a few times in these discussions. This doesn't ever for say, you know, mean that there's some state that we're suddenly going to get to and be educated or complete in some sense. There's no such thing as wholeness for say. It's this educational process is always ongoing.
Yeah. So I think that's why also there is no clear answer or clear goal in the book of this is the state you want to achieve or something. It's really a kind of endless iteration, or it's not just once reborn and then forever you're fine or you're perfect. It's kind of endless loops of being reborn in that sense. That might be more the ideal. And there is no end point. It just, so typically the story in the literature ends when the young man returns as reborn, but actually the story should just reiterate itself completely anew, and he should again leave town and go to another place, etc. As nowadays the franchises do very well, you have endless set of movies doing the same. But anyway, that so that might be more indeed the model. It's not a kind of returning to an original at all in Serres. There is no original in that sense. There is only kind of temporary set of starting points that you renegotiate, that you reform, transform, etc.
Mm-hmm. I guess this is why it's difficult to sort of taper off a conversation about a philosopher who's largely process-based. There's never going to be a time with Serres when we can say, right, that conversation is done, that conversation is over. It's always a process of sort of, as you say, a continual loop, which, you know, if you step off that emperor's rug, and the world should just keep feeding back into you, and you keep learning from your experiences. So there's never going to be a goal or end of this book or of Serres' philosophy, really.
Yeah, and that's why it's often interesting to reread books by Michel Serres, because it's typically precisely you could conceptualize reading a book by Michel Serres as one of these exposures, right? So you can endlessly go again through the same book and see new connections, new themes popping up, given other books you read, etc. And you are transformed, reborn through the book, and Serres, the book itself, of course, also shifts in that meaning. That's part of the pleasure, I would say, of reading Michel Serres.
Okay.
Where indeed the goal is not to find the ultimate meaning of the text. I don't think he wrote text for that purpose, and I don't think they should be read for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. But okay. That seems, I mean, is there anything you'd like to add about The Troubadour of Knowledge that you feel is key that we haven't touched on?
So maybe a theme, again, to which the original title pays more homage, if you want to say that like that, than the translated title. So the Le Tiers Instruit, so the instructed third, one context, one third Serres was looking for in this book and in other places is that between science and culture. So mm-hmm. That's a theme that is also very present. So it's an education that he prescribes, but not in a certain sense, you could also say it's just not just any education. It's a new type of intellectual that should be educated, according to Serres. And this new educated is the instructed third between two other figures, namely science and humanities. So this kind of attention that typically linked originally with C.P. Snow's famous essay on the two cultures. Snow was a physicist who also was a novelist, complained that novelists and physicists do not understand one another. And then he also called for some kind of new type of intellectual that combines both worlds. And in a certain sense, Serres, not just this book, but earlier books as well, but very explicitly in this book, you could read this instructed third, this task of education in the light of that tension between should science and culture not come into contact more closely. And he defines, I think, in this book, culture, strangely enough, but I mean, interestingly, as culture is about suffering, is about experiences of pain and collective suffering. I suffer. And science, I think, is defined as we think, as a kind of collective thinking. And it would say, well, a full person is only capable of understanding the world, not just by science, not just by culture, but by the combination of both, etc. And in that sense, also this plea of Exodus might be read in that way, is that scientists should not just stick to science, but also expose themselves to literature, to the humanities, and the other way around, obviously, as well. People, novelists, people from philosophy, cultural studies, humanities, etc., should also expose themselves to the scientists. And we should hope for a kind of instructed third that is capable to somewhat navigate him or herself in both worlds. This is also this metaphor at the beginning. So somewhere at the beginning, he starts about how he, as a left-handed person, was obliged, forced to write with his right hand. But he thanks his teacher for this. He doesn't blame his teacher for this. He says, thank you, because I have become the instructed third, in at least in this metaphorical sense, that I'm capable of writing with two hands, without pretending that I'm at home in both worlds, right? He isn't at home in the right-handed world. He is still a left-handed person, but he is capable to, in a certain sense, communicate with his right hand as well. In that sense, he thanks the teacher for that. And that's perhaps in that kind of pedagogical relation that is after, where you are exposed to things you would otherwise never deal with, either science or culture, and that should be nonetheless, the ambition, and that has to do, I think this is the book written after the contract with nature, the natural contract. So it also has to do with societal problems about climate change, about the violence of science and technology, where precisely the both worlds are combined. Science is culture and culture is science. They are not separated from one another.
Mm-hmm. So education for Serres is in... sort of true education for Serres is in that point where you become that third, you become that struggling position, which is put in a moment of suffering.
Yeah, yeah, in a way. So it's a bit like me trying to talk English. I mean, I'm obviously an instructed third in that language. I'm not a native speaker, and I do not lose my native tongue, but I'm somewhat precisely exposed to this new language, to the new ways of phrasing things, to the problems it raises, to new things I can read in that language. I often return to my original language, but there is this kind of interesting new tension that is created. So I'm not an English speaker. I'm not a Dutch native speaker anymore. I am this third figure somewhere in between, within the tension, thinking in Dutch, perhaps speaking in English. And that makes, according to Serres, that is the locus, the place where something new can arise that would not arise for English native speakers nor for Dutch native speakers. So that's one way metaphorically to think about that.
Okay. Just at the end here, I did want to bring it up that you are, is it finished or are you still working on your... You've got a book coming out on Serres, basically, that you want to talk about.
So, yeah, I'm still working on it. I'm writing on it right now, finishing some chapters still. I hope to finish the first version, complete version, quite soon. And then hopefully it will somewhere appear. I think hopefully 2022. That's my ambition. So the book is about, the title is also Michel Serres and French philosophy of science, and that gives it away in a certain sense. So my ambition of that book is not to pinpoint the ultimate meaning of Serre's text, as we clearly shown is quite hard, but rather to delve up a number of frameworks, themes, authors that are at work in Michel Serre and that were colleagues, friends, maybe even enemies in France at that time. So to really situate Michel Serre's thought, his books, his themes, in the kind of debates that were happening in France at the time when he was writing his books, and also to create new kinds of interesting points that Michel Serre could make for these debates. So it's also, in a sense, what could Serre bring to classical themes typically discussed in Link? And to, it's about authors like Gaston Bachelard and classical historical French epistemology, as it is called, the Bachelard and Canguilhem in debate typically, or Foucault is a typical figure there. But Serre is often overlooked in that context. So you have Serre scholars on the one hand, and then people writing on Canguilhem, Bachelard, Foucault, and all these reflections on science in France. And I want to bring in Michel Serre in a number of these debates as well. So it's kind of, in that sense, an instructor third here, but the creation of an instructor third between these two communities of Serre scholars and people working on a number of otherwise isolated debates in French philosophy, and mainly French philosophy of science. So it's really about how do a number of figures, and I think Michel Serre is a beautiful example of that, in France think about science, not just as a question about how does knowledge come into being, but also a question about violence, about the relation between science and culture, science and violence, science and modernity, and all these link themes. And also Serre's thought on religion and ecology and these things, and how they are not just relevant for religious debates, let's put it that way, or even ecological debates, but typically can also be put to use to reconceptualize how to think about science, culture, society, etc.
Okay. Why do you think it is that he hasn't been sort of included in these debates?
So there are a number of reasons one might give for that. One is, of course, that Michel Serre's own books are quite atypical in the sense that he doesn't write as a classical philosopher would, giving arguments, citing other people, criticizing their point of view. But that might also have to do with the specific biography of Michel Serre. So he was, well, in his own terms, he was thrown out of philosophy and in a certain sense Paris. He had to flee from Paris, well, not literally in a sense, but that's how he saw himself, as I had no home in Paris, they did not want me, and that has to do with his relation with Canguilhem and with Althusser and these other figures. And he went then to the United States, where for instance René Girard was also, and he took him in, as Serre would say it. And so you have that isolated stance of Serre, who is, as many French philosophers typically, not read in France, but read outside of France. Typically Anglo-American scholars reading and citing and commenting on Michel Serre more than people in France themselves. And so you have a kind of isolation of debates. And especially since Serre does not really cite anyone, he doesn't refer to people, it's quite hard to bring those existing connections with all these French debates that are at work in his books to the surface. And that's what I try to do a bit in my book, how people like also Girard and Georges de Musil and Foucault, etc., Canguilhem, are at work in Michel Serre, either in a positive or a negative sense, that he's defining himself against, for instance, as we said, against Bachelard and this ideal of the permanent school, or that he draws a lot on Girard and de Musil, for instance, to rearticulate their points in his own way.
Okay. And which publisher will this be through?
So that will be with Bloomsbury Press.
Okay.
So you can find the book already as a title online. So it's
So it's just Michel Serre and the French.
Michel Serre and French philosophy of science, and the subtitle is Ecology, Materiality, and Quasi-Object. So I will focus a bit on that notion of quasi-object as well, that we think touched upon in the discussion of the parasite as well. Mm-hmm. That is a kind of recurrent theme of how we, well, in this case, it would applies to this instructed third. It would be this third center around which we, well, circulate and sling ourselves to another place that will be a kind of quasi object for Serre, if you want to put it that way. So that's kind of a central thread also in the book of how that notion can help us think about science and society.
Okay. And that'll be 2022.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. If everything goes right.
Okay. Wow. I look forward to it. Yeah, this seems like a good place to finish up. So, Massimiliano Simmons, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.